welcome back to the Can't Be Hid podcast. This week I have a guest with me, not even a guest, I'd say a co-host with me, who you all are very familiar with if you have listened to my podcast in the past. Now, listen, that's probably about five of y'all, so, you know, I'm not here assuming that there's been a ton of people who know about this podcast, especially since it's had different iterations. And so just a little bit about the Can't Be Hid podcast and what our plans are to do, since this is only really the second episode under which we're doing this, is that, you know, our goal is to really, at the end of the day, spread the gospel. Most of the individuals who will be on this podcast are probably black individuals. It won't necessarily only be black individuals, but for the most part, it might be black individuals. And black individuals who seek to take the Bible and their faith seriously, and think about how that informs the real occurrences that we happen upon in everyday life. So, you know, with that being said, it's good to have my brother Randall, who, you know, we've had conversations in the past on other podcasts and when we were doing YouTube videos around things like social justice, around things like, you know, employment and workforce type stuff. So, yeah, you know, we Randall has partnered with me in, or I should say I've partnered with him in some programs he was doing over at the University of Maryland and stuff. So, yeah, you know, it's good to have you back on, Randall.
Yeah, appreciate you having me, brother. It's good to connect.
Yep. All right. So today's conversation, everybody. Now, mind you, if you hear us, if you sound a little tired, we're recording this. We got together at 7 o'clock. We're both sitting in our cars, you know, trying to do some recording at 7 a.m. You might hear a little bit of sleep in our voice. But so bear with us. We're doing what we can to get what we hope will be helpful content out there to you. Randall, today's topic, you know, what I sent out to the guys, you included, was let's talk about, for those who are available, let's talk about protesting. All right. You know, because you sometimes we talk about social justice at large. And so some of what we see is that there are phases, there are, you know, different pieces to the social justice puzzle. There are the occurrences of injustice, and then there are the responses to that injustice. And so, you know, I was interested into seeing first, maybe, you know, let's, from your take, how do we define protest? What is protesting? You know, for those who may not know what protesting is or its purpose, you know, how do you see it? And then also, probably most importantly, is how does the gospel inform how you see protest, how you do protest, what you believe to be your place within protesting?
Sure. Yeah, man. And I think as you mentioned, protest is a very essential and critical tactic in the fight for social justice, right? Or, you know, whatever the cause may be. I think protest to me is very simply just a means of expressing your objection or resistance to something, right? So, of course, there can be different types of protest. You know, what you've been hearing a lot lately is like nonviolent protest, right? Even back from, you know, civil rights era, nonviolent protest, you know, peaceful protest, you know, which I think is very, you know, politicized now. We'll get to that later. But then there are also other forms of protest, right? You got the, you know, the picket signing and you know, marching, you know, toward a Capitol building and so forth that we might traditionally associate with protesting. But in my mind, protesting is also things that you do maybe less directly, right? Like it may, I wouldn't even call it passively. It's a very active form of protesting and maybe calling, you know, up your local city council members or your governor's office, or sending an email or signing petitions, right? Or even donating to organizations that would further kind of champion the cause that you're protesting for, right? So I think it's really important for people to understand that, yes, it is a very critical part of, you know, a fight or, you know, sort of cause that you're advocating for. And it's a critical way in which you can illuminate the injustice that's going on, right? That you're fighting and resisting against. And then lastly, that there are various forms and ways to participate. I think a lot of times we get intimidated that, oh yeah, I'm not that type of dude or lady, you know, who want to be out there on the road and, you know, be there in front of police officers or whoever, you know, you may be protesting against, and put myself in direct danger. All right. That's not to say you're less passionate about the cause, but, you know, it just may not be, you know, your calling, right? And we could talk about what the Bible says about that in a second, but did you want me to jump into that now or?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Go into your flow.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, the second part of your question is, you know, how does the Bible, you know, or our faith kind of inform that? And I think it's the very crux of what the Bible is, right? When you think about it, man. It's the story of God's people being oppressed, right, over time by different kind of governing powers or authorities, and God kind of redeeming them from them, right, mm-hmm. and restoring them, you know, and delivering them, you know, from the Egyptians to, you know, the Persians to the Romans, and it goes on and on. Mm-hmm. And in each one of those stories, you know, there's a particular character or group of characters that are kind of the face of that movement against the authority, right? I mean, we can think of countless, man. I mean, there's essentially not a character in the Bible that isn't or hasn't used the tactic of protest, you know, to call God's people back into his arms, essentially, right? Like, one that really stands out to me, man, is, and I it's funny because I had read his story fairly recently. It's Stephen, right? So in Acts, man, he was essentially calling out his, you know, the Jewish community, or at least one sect of it, on the fact that they weren't truly living up to, you know, the very word and principles that they were kind of swearing by, right? Mm-hmm. And he did it in a very direct way. You know, and one could identify that as kind of resistance, as protest to, you know, the authority in place. That's and the scariest thing, man, about that authority is that they can manipulate the truth, right? They could immediately turn that truth into blasphemy, right? So he was putting his life on the line. Ultimately, it cost him his life, but he wasn't afraid to publicly kind of push back against something that he felt like was the antithesis, you know, of what truth was, right? You know, there's Esther, there's Moses, like there's so many, Jesus himself, John the Baptist, you know? So I think protesting is at the very core of who we are as Christians, and that we were kind of meant to be the voice to the voiceless, right?
That was powerful, you know, because it's funny. I was talking about Stephen the other day with someone else, and I forgot exactly why he came up. But yeah, he can be a character that is easily overlooked. And I thought that it was great that you brought him up. Interestingly, you know, when I think about the story of Stephen in the book of Acts, in its full context, there's something interesting that stands out and that you caused me to start exploring when you said his name. And that is that Stephen, his protest was against his own people.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually stirred something up in me just now. And that's not to say that he was fond of the, let's call it the Roman occupation of his people. We know that almost none of the Israelites or the Jews, you know, in the New Testament were necessarily fond of being occupied by Rome or any of the other governments that had occupied them at some time, as you had mentioned. Mm-hmm. But it seems that Stephen still held his people to a certain expectation in terms mm-hmm. of an operation of, if we can call it an operation of excellence, right? Mm-hmm. As the people of God, as the distinct people of God, carry yourself in essence in such and such a way. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting only because I think there is a lot of conversation about, and this is by no means a what about Black people and how they treat themselves kind of thing, mm-hmm. by no means. But I thought that it was interesting that, hey, you know, what about us as Black individuals, knowing that, because we know that in essence Caesar is never going to give us the what it is that we're fully looking for,
mm-hmm.
you know, what, how do we challenge ourselves to really be as consistent as we can be in saying, hey, we are going to to operate in the fullness of who we can be, right? Yeah. Instead of waiting for Caesar to come down and fix some things for us, we're really going to take it upon ourselves as much as is possible to to build our communities, to increase our education, to take back some of the communities that have been run down, unfortunately, due to some of the policies that have been set up, you know. And so almost a pushback against ourselves and saying, and really saying, hey, we have to operate on two fronts, fair, whether it's fair or not fair, but we have to operate on the front of still, you know, challenging Caesar respectfully and as peacefully as possible to do better, mm-hmm. and also challenging ourselves where we can to put forth our full excellence, you know. And so you just made me mm-hmm. think about some of those things when you brought up the name Stephen, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. I think you raised great points that I do think there are many things that as a community we can do to liberate ourselves. I feel like we've been doing those things, right? And we've always mm-hmm. had to do that, right? We've always from day one, right? And you know, some historians say, especially Black historians, say that we've been here much longer before. We've been here much earlier than when we were brought over here as enslaved people, mm-hmm. right? But let's even just start from that point, that we've always had to advocate for ourselves, right? We always had to try to be resourceful and resilient and be able to adapt to circumstances to still try to form some sense of dignity for ourselves, man, some sense of community, mm-hmm. right? Some sort of a sense of agency for ourselves, right? So I don't think that's ever been a problem in our community, right? Like mm-hmm. just knowing that in order to even acquire education, we had to create our own, mm-hmm. right? Any economic mobility, we had to create our own, right? So, and we did it all the while when the oppressor, man, wasn't even allowing us to access mm-hmm. the resources or mm-hmm. you know, equitable access to resources that would help us develop in that way, mm-hmm. right? And in fact, that was one of the things they most feared, that our ability to acquire that sort of knowledge and agency might, mm-hmm. Cause a somewhat of a insurrection and rebellion against them, mm-hmm. you know, so they had to silence us, man. So I agree that that's that there's a responsibility and there are great opportunities for us to empower and uplift our own community. And I feel like we've been doing that since day one. Right. And then, you know, to the other point, I think the issue is that nobody or the powers that be are still and have still yet to acknowledge, man, that the systemic kind of policies, the systemic things that they had in place are still working against us in that pursuit. Right. So I think that's what the protesting is really about, man, that it's calling out the fact that, yes, we do care about gang violence. We in the economy. We do care about, you know, ourselves, uplifting our youth and so forth. But we're trying to tell you that these things that we're seeing on TV are symptoms of a system that is still in place. And we need your help in recognizing that and being allies in our pursuit of liberating, you know, our community. Right. And I think sometimes you can't be 100% respectful. You know, you can't always be nonviolent, right, to raise awareness about that. And I think just by seeing the results of this most recent protest, man, you can see the change that has brought about in like a record time. You know what I'm saying? If we let the justice system handle itself and the police departments handle themselves, right, we probably wouldn't have gotten any convictions or charges pressed against these officers, right? Just to name one example. So yeah, I think you're right. And I invite you to kind of, you know, expound on that too, man, because I'm curious to hear, you know, what things you're thinking about in terms of, you know, different things we can do as a community. But I think we've always had that mindset, you know, so our protest has only ever been in recognition that there's still things in place here that are keeping us from being able to, you know, really thrive the way we know we're capable of it in the society.
Yeah, man. I think you raised some excellent points. We have always had individuals who are basically protesting, as I like how you stated it before, protesting in different ways, even not necessarily the way of marching on the streets, but simply, you know, in ways that they have chosen to try to just uplift the Black community, you know, as a sign of protest, even if they didn't know it was a sign of protest, it was a sign of protest. You know what I think one of our challenges is a numbers problem. Mm-hmm. It's the same reason why I think sometimes it might be hard for businesses to get off the ground, or why it might be hard for, well, let me say, I think it's the exact reason why our community has asked individuals who are a part of the community of power, so to speak, to utilize that power on behalf, and I think that's very biblical, on behalf of their weaker brother, so to speak. And when I say we have a numbers problem, I think the challenge that we have is there have always been people doing work, doing the work, let's say, but it's a heavy lift, you know, and I think about, you know, I think about some of the businesses who sometimes they have a great idea. But the great idea requires, you know, up front. I use the example of a rocket ship, right? A rocket ship, in the beginning, I'm talking about, you need massive power to raise that thing into the air, you know. But once it gets to a certain height, then it can drop the rockets. You know, I don't know all these technical terms, but, you know, it can drop the boosters or whatever it is, and then you know, propel itself utilizing its inertia and the other forces that are available to it now that it's gotten up into the air. But that initial thrust needs a bit of mm-hmm. energy. And I think one of the things that happens for us is that we have the ratio of individuals trying to do the mm-hmm. lift. We need more individuals out there doing the, you know, mm-hmm. actively, even if passively, right. you know, doing the work. That's one of the things that's brought it to the attention. Even if only all people have is social mm-hmm. media, social media has been on fire mm-hmm. with this. You know, we want everybody probably to do a little more than just social media. Right. But hey, if that's all somebody has access to, putting this thing out there has shown itself to be quite helpful. Just having your camera and your cell phone available when something is going mm-hmm. down has been helpful. So it just seems to me that the more individuals we can have participating mm-hmm. and actively participating, man, it helps.
You raise an excellent point, right? And that's was going to be one of my questions to you as well, right? Like, you know, I think social media has been another critical tool in educating mm-hmm. the masses, right? Because I think we're, as a society, a miseducated people,
true.
Right? So I think, you know, yes, there needs to be intention behind what you post, right? And you need to actually know what it is that you're posting and not just, you know, repost what your friends are posting, right? But yeah. I think it's brought so much awareness, man. It's called, mm-hmm. you know, our allies from different backgrounds to really try to empathize with what our experience is, right? And as you can see in the protests, there's been, you know, masses of people from all different, you know, ethnic backgrounds, from, you know, white European to, you know, indigenous folk to Asians. I mean, and the list goes on and on. Latinx people, you know what I mean? So, but my mm-hmm. question to you, right, is, and then you also see athletes, you see, you know, organizations, yep. the NFL,
and other,
right,
nations.
Other nations, and you see bands as well. Now, understanding whether that's authentic and genuine or not, or just to avoid being labeled as racist as a result of not posting, yeah. is another thing. Right. But how about the church, man? Right, because we. You know, I saw my, you know, family member of mine post something that kind of spoke to one particular church denomination as being silent on this issue. So I guess kind of where do you see us standing and the church, you know, kind of in general standing on participation, right? Whether it be via social media, whether it be kind of protesting in the streets and so on.
Excellent question, man. And I think, again, if we go back to, I thought that your use of Stephen was, man, that was real unique, just because so many people don't go to, you know, Stephen. Stephen's not necessarily a character whose name comes up often mm-hmm. When we talk about, you know, biblical characters. But actually, if you read Stephen's story, his story is, I mean, the biblical writers in writing his story make a lot of parallels in terms of even just the words that he used being similar to Jesus. Mm-hmm. So I think that the church plays a significant role, because especially let me say it in this way. I think the church plays a significant role in showing what complete social justice and what a complete protest can be. All right. And let me use, you were using Stephen in a story not too far, in a story that happened around that same period. You have the story of Peter. And I think Peter had a powerful moment, man. Oh, snap. You just took me to a sermon, bro. I ain't even mean to
preach on, man.
This literally, as I was saying this, something just came to mind. There were two ways that Peter tried to protest, right? And the first protest that I was going to talk about was after Jesus had been killed, you know, about 50 days later, all of a sudden you see, you know, these guys, his disciples are sitting there, you know, it's the day of Pentecost, and all of a sudden they're filled with the Spirit. And Peter actually goes into protest against the very people who he had been running mm-hmm. from prior to the crucifixion, mm-hmm. or at the moment of the crucifixion. And so something about Christ's death and resurrection and how Peter now saw the scriptures through that lens, you know, gave him the confidence to speak boldly to the people who he accused of being partakers in the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, an innocent man. Mm-hmm. And yea, not even just an innocent man, but even the Son of mm-hmm. God. in Peter's
That's
mind.
Bold.
Yeah, you know, and so you think about the transformation that needed to happen in order to allow him to speak boldly and say to these guys' faces, mm-hmm. you know, you did this thing. But when I talk about and then again, look at transformation, because before that, Peter wanted to protest by going and chopping off. I think his name is Malchus, but one of the priests, guards or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, you know, looks at him and says, no. This isn't going to be the means by which we protest, you know, as a part of this movement. And he reminds him, he's like, guys, you don't think that if I wanted to, I couldn't have legions of angels mm-hmm. here at a simple call, mm-hmm. you know? So Peter, that's, I feel you and I understand. And that's how, you know, the Maccabees centuries before, you know, a Jewish sect had revolted against the powers that had oppressed them. Mm-hmm. But Jesus was like, hey, we're doing something a little bit more subversive, mm-hmm. but just trust me, if you go with me, it's going to work. So then fast forward now, you know, Peter is trying to protest by violence. And then all of a sudden we see Peter protesting, not being afraid to protest mm-hmm. and not being afraid to die, even if he can't be the one that resorts to violence himself. Mm-hmm. Right. So now when I think about that and watch this piece of the protest, he's talking to these individuals who he had run from just weeks before. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't just stop at, yo, you did wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? He makes a subtle move to repent, and he tells them, you need to repent. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important move in the language that Christianity can bring to the table and model on behalf of individuals, because it can be very easy to protest from a place of self-righteousness, mm-hmm. you know, and that comes with its own dangers, because, you know, when we operate, speaking biblically, mm-hmm. you know, if we fall into operating out of self-righteousness, we can easily, without realizing it, become the oppressor as well as we are being mm-hmm. oppressed, you know, and take up the very attitude that we seek to dismantle. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing, but showing, okay, boom, this is not only are we calling you out and what you've been doing, but we do want you to repent. And what repent means is to turn from what you have been doing, right. And turn, if all we can get you to do is turn in terms of your action, we'll mm-hmm. take it. But if we can really get you to turn in terms of your heart, mm-hmm. man, mm-hmm. we really doing something. Yeah. And then I think where the church ultimately comes in is in that aspect of forgiveness as mm-hmm. well, which can be very challenging. But I think Christ modeled it. And I think if I'm correct, because I don't have a Bible right in front of mm-hmm. me, but if I'm correct, I'd have to go back and read the story. Even Stephen, in his protest, gets to a point where, as he's being killed for his protest, says, you know, Father, forgive them for what, for they know not what they do. If I'm correct, I could be wrong, y'all. If I'm wrong, but even Stephen didn't say that. The person who ultimately we do model, Jesus Christ, is crucified for, you know, protesting against how all humans, the people who are supposed to be, you know, his direct followers and also the rest of the world, how they abuse power. And what he does is shows you that, hey, this is how I use my power. I use my power by actually laying down my power, right? I don't use my power to beat people down, but the power, anytime that Jesus did use his power, it was to help those who were vulnerable, you know? And so that is the challenge for, so let's take that to the white church, right? The evangelical church, so to speak, as the term is widely used. But the question is, in many of those churches, sometimes their voice has been lent to continue to increase the power of those in power at the expense of those who might consider the weaker brother. When, if you're reading, you know, the gospel in my eyes, if you're reading it properly, then, you know, there's a challenge to the weaker brother to continue to love and to continue to forgive even as they are protesting, right? Which is what Jesus showed on the cross. You can crucify me, but I'm still going to say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, right? But the challenge also, it's a double-edged sword. The challenge also goes to those who are in power to say, hey, I will use my power for the good of my weaker brother. And then if I can't use my power in such a way that it doesn't harm my weaker brother, then I lay my power down altogether. And I think that that is a full message that I only see the gospel, you know, really bringing to light. I think the challenge that we have, and I know that my response to your question has been a long
one. No, you're good.
But
man,
I think the challenge that we have is that, to some extent, the Christian church in our current age suffers a little bit from biblical illiteracy to an extent. And I think we miss a lot of those themes that would help us to bring a response to the situation that arises in this world that transcends kind of some of the traditional responses that man has attempted thus far. So yeah, man, sorry for the long response to you, but I had to think through some some things that I was seeing as I was trying to respond.
Yeah, and I think, man, we're in process with our listeners, right? Like we're trying to understand, you know, the Bible as well as our roles as Christians, right? As meaningful contributors to our society. Right. And I think, you know, it's okay for us to kind of still be figuring those things out. Right. And trying to apply wisdom where we can. And I think you're exactly right that the church has taken on somewhat of an elitist, you know, kind of standpoint, and that this is, it's almost like a social club where now this is for us, you know, the ones who, you know, may have money or who have everything together, who, you know, are, you know, not suffering in any type of way, right? And we keep it to ourselves, right? I think in every denomination, right, there's a certain extent of us kind of being selfish, you know, with the gospel, right? That you know, we're not really heeding the call that you know, Christ gave to his disciples, you know, upon, you know, looking forward to his death. You know what I mean? He gave them the Holy Spirit so that we can go out, you know, on the Great Commission, right? And spread the gospel and be, you know, a light and be the salt of the earth and so forth, right? And I think we've missed that. I think back in the days of, you know, the Civil Rights Movement, you know, the church was that, but it was also a great place for the community to kind of be mobilized and galvanized, man. Like it was more than just preaching, right? It was more than just worshiping and singing songs. And it represented hope. It represented organization. It represented, a space where even protesters could be informed and trained before going out, into the world and participating in the movement and protesting. Right. And I think that's what churches ought to be today as well. I don't like the fact that certain types of protests are silenced. Right. And I think we see it all throughout the Bible. Right. That there's a great quote by James Baldwin, man, that says, "I love America more than any other country in this world. And exactly for this reason is why I insist on criticizing her perpetually." Right. So I think, all throughout the Bible, we see, like, even with Stephen, right, he was calling out his own people out of love to bring them back. Right. Mm-hmm. Into the truth. Right. And, mm-hmm. and it's because he loved them that he wanted them to come back into God's truth. I think a lot of times, we can't see ourselves as being political, right, in the process of participating in these types of movements, man. It's more about illuminating the truth, right, empowering those who may not have as much of a voice or have as much agency and so forth. And of course, being able to develop the one thing, man, that governments can't control, and that's your spirit. Right. They can control you and oppress you economically. They can control and oppress you, socially, politically. Right. But your spirit is that one place that is sacred. Right. And I think the church it can play a significant role in that, and I also just want to bring up, man, two other types of great protests. And maybe we can talk about this as we continue the conversation. But, I was talking about Esther, right? And just real quick on that story, like, King Xerxes had elevated this guy Haman to a really prominent position in kind of his military and in his kingdom, essentially, and he because Mordecai said that he would not bow down to him and essentially worship him for his status, he got angry, right? Created a false narrative around who he was and decided he was going to put out an order to kill all the Jews, right? Mm-hmm. And so Mordecai, understanding he was really distressed and understanding that he alone didn't possess the power, right? Or the networks or kind of, in some ways the agency to make a change. He contacted Esther, who was one of the queens in Xerxes' kingdom, right? To leverage her positioning to advocate for their people, right? Because she herself was a Jew, right? And ultimately she said, I don't know that I can do this, right? Because I can't approach the king. Nobody can approach the king unless summoned, right? But what I want you to do is go back to our people, pray and fast on my behalf. Right. So that I can be prepared and equipped to advocate on behalf of our people. You know what I'm saying? And ultimately, her people were saved, man. And that's how the church ought to be operating as well. Right. That we are praying. We understand that each of us are a different part of the body of Christ. Right. And we all have our own function, our own purpose and so forth. So we ought to be actively praying on behalf of each other, fasting on behalf of each other, but also training each other and educating each other so that once we get out there, man, we are speaking with and from nothing but the truth. Right. And so, yeah, I think exactly what you were talking about is the challenge we ought to put on ourselves and our congregations. Because, man, we are the essential, participants in this thing. So, yeah.
So here's, and this is why what you were saying is so powerful, because this is exactly, I can sometimes, I know, sound very critical about certain things. And I think, any of us who like to do things like podcasts or what have you, it's often because we have some sort of critique of something, whether it be an institution, whether it be a movement or a person or what have you. And sometimes people see a critique as judgment, you know, or condemnation. But I think that what we don't realize is that a critique is important and helpful. As you said, protesting is a critique, you know, of something. It's pointing out and shining light and saying, hey, there is something that is off here. And so as I think about, you know, what you were just saying, this goes back to a critique of Christianity, at least in the Western world, in the 21st century, you know. And I think that we have gotten away from, because it's now a somewhat popular, because it's relatively accepted, I think we forget the courage that it took for the, you know, the Israelites of the Old Testament, and then the Jews and the Gentiles in the New Testament who decided to follow Yahweh. This was actually a very unpopular thing. So their whole lives were shaped by being, I guess what you could say, being seen as less than, you know what I mean? And so there was a certain, in, how do I want to say it?
So much to say.
They had to operate from a, from a certain level of, let's say, to use the word, I can say the word urgency, right? There was a certain level of urgency. And even then you see that one of the frustrations that, that, or one of the critiques that God had against them, especially in the Old Testament, was, hey, you all, you have been chosen to be my representations in this world, not merely for yourselves, but because through you, I plan to save the whole world. And yet you are settling for less than that, that responsibility, you know? And what you don't understand is that when you choose not to settle for that responsibility, I have chosen to do my work through you. So, yes, don't worry about it. I will find a remnant, absolutely. But do know that when you aren't participating how I've called you to participate, that has very real effects in the world, because I, the plan that I have designed has been, is a plan that where people will take what you called, Randall, truth to other people, right? That's how I've chosen to do it. And I think that what the church has missed out on, because I think we haven't, and this is a critique, not just about the church, this is a critique of myself as well. Because we haven't sat down and, let's say, really wrestled with what the scriptures are saying, I think a lot of times what we see Christianity as tends to be a farce anyway, you know, a lot of the times, you know, it has been in many ways, dumbed down to, somewhat of a slash between entertainment and sometimes, you know, a coping mechanism. And I think we miss the call of Christianity to go you there for. And one other thing that I was going to say is that it, you look at all the biblical stories of at least moments in, because all of these people in the Bible were flawed except Christ. But at least when you see flashes of them doing the right thing, these, yo, it took courage. You know what I'm saying? It took a level of courage. And I think what you said, Randall, is key, is that we're not just after, or let me put it this way. When David conquered Goliath, David didn't credit that to his own wisdom or the wisdom of the world. David said, David credited that to God, you know, and God's wisdom and God's power and God's ability, mm-hmm. even though David was the one that's acted. And so I think that that's something that we do have to recognize with, if we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, so to speak, though we see flesh and blood, we have to kind of, as Christians, remember that there is, you know, this will sound weird to those who maybe don't aren't spiritual, but we have to wrestle with the fact that we believe that there are, in essence, let's say, a realm that's invisible mm-hmm. to us, you know, and that realm, our wisdom is not enough to wrestle right. against, you know, so we need the power of God to really come in and do that which we can't, which is to change the hearts of men, which I think is what we hope to do. So, yeah, man, that's how I would respond to that.
Yeah, yeah, I appreciate the word, man, and I think
the when we look at some of the most meaningful protests, right, or acts of rebellion, I like to call it, as opposed to, you know, I think there's a difference between and language and semantics is very important, right? Because labeling something a riot versus rebellion, I think they have two different meanings and social, you know, connotations, right? But I think some of the most meaningful participants in protests, man, have been those who did it in spite of themselves, right? And again, all across the good book, you know, with Christ being the primary example, man, we've seen that. We've seen that in people like, you know, Colin Kaepernick, right? We've seen in an Esther. Mm-hmm. We've seen that, you know, countless men and women, man, you know, throughout the history of this country who we don't even know about in the history books, right? But know that you don't always have to be that person. Right. Like, there may come a time where you will be called to be that person. And I think that's where, in the meantime, and you know, as momentum shifts with each one of these movements, in the meantime, you need to be studying and preparing so that once your time comes to be that person,
right,
you can step in, right, with confidence. But even with that, man, if you're not that person, there's still a critical role for you. Right, they talk about, there's this great short video that I think I may have shared with you a while ago, man, about how to start a movement. And they talk about how important the first follower is. Right, so you have that, you remember? Yeah, you had that person out there who's looking crazy, you know, calling things out, you know, maybe not as polished, but, you know, it's raising awareness, you know, critical awareness of, hey, there's an issue here. Right. And, you know, when you see that individual, first thing you hear is a smear campaign. Oh, you know, well, how's he talking when, or she talking when this is their record? Or, you know, well, they're not spitting facts, right? They're just talking out of emotion. And, oh, they wore this shirt, right? So that shirt, you know, was against the police. So I don't, you know, so trying to discredit the person, right? So then that first follower, though, who steps up and says, no, this is real. Right, and starts organizing, mobilizing people behind this cause that that person essentially served as, you know, a martyr for, to a certain extent. Right, it's what really is a very critical and underestimated role in really pushing these movements forward, man. So, you know, I think just kind of my last thought is that we need to, number one, understand that there's several critical roles that one can play in seeking a more just society, right? And that as we, you know, try to figure out where we're being called, you know, as Christians and even those who may not, you know, identify as Christians, that we need to be preparing ourselves for that moment where we can step in confidently, man, and spread the truth and, you know, be the very embodiment of truth and love, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think, you know, my last thought would be what you just said. I think is important to realize that that is protest as well, kind of like what you were saying earlier, that protest doesn't begin at the heightened moment, but by in the moments where maybe that aren't so visible, in the moments where there's not maybe a lot of noise being made, you know, the preparation, the homework that you're doing to be filled with the Spirit, you know, so that he can show you how to operate with wisdom on some of those things. You know, are aspects of protest that sometimes get are forgotten about. So just kind of that knowledge, that being studied, that being connected with, you know, the one who has saved us, you know, but and then some other aspects as well, you know, kind of understanding the key that you're in, understanding the times that we're in, understanding, you know, have you, you know, if we even just take it away from just racial injustice, but, you know, how have I conducted myself in this world? Have I contributed to some of the things that go on in this world? You know, what is my place? Do I understand some of the important problems enough so that I will be ready to act when it is time to act? And then ultimately keeping in mind for us, man, that the ultimate problem that we're up against is a sin problem. You know, whether we're talking about slavery, whether we're talking about, you know, civil rights, you know, the social justice movements, whether we're talking about how women have been treated at other points. And this is not to say that there aren't some items that are more prominent in our society at current than others. But, you know, I think the Christian steps back from the 30,000 foot view and says, yo, mankind has a sin problem, because even when we take, even if we solve one problem, we find a way to segment ourselves and establish power and dominance over each other in some other way, form, or fashion. And we have a problem of sin. And ultimately, man, you know, until we eradicate that, man, if it's not one problem, it's going to be another, you know? And so, what we aim to do is chop the head off of the beast altogether, you know? But one of the many heads that's before us at this time is the, you know, is the race relations. And so since that's the one that we can see, and we'll do our best to try to attack that, man. So anyway, you know, I think we've done what we can on this topic, and it was a pleasure having you on. Hope that our listeners, you know, got something, some nugget that they could take away that'll help them to think about how they will participate in protesting. What is their place? What means are available to them? And, you know, what place does that have for them as Christians who might be listening as well?
Yeah,
so
I appreciate you having me on, man. This was much needed.
Yeah, man. Absolutely, man. Well, that's it for that Can't Be Hit podcast. Until next week, y'all be good. Average is failure. All right. I still think that the gospel is the best response and the best answer that the world has for some of the challenges that we face today. All right, y'all. We're out of here. Peace.